KPFT. Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Thanks for your help. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on the control board as usual, and I always am struck to pause. I never know quite how to approach the week's information. So just, you know, give me that moment. All right. Some of you may have heard that Reuters has essentially instructed their reporters to cover the Trump regime as they cover any other authoritarian government. You may have seen a lot of articles. One that I found is from AlterNet. There are a lot of other stories. The first paragraph of the AlterNet story starts, Reuters editor-in-chief Steve Adler sent a letter to staff Wednesday with recommendations on how to cover the Trump administration. The message suggests that the news organization's journalists should report on Trump's actions the same as they do other authoritarian regimes around the world. I took the extra step of trying to find that particular memo from the Reuters editor-in-chief. So if you go to my website, thinkwingradio.com, unless my computer has surprised me, which it has done from time to time, I have published on my blog tonight's itinerary. If I didn't publish it because it said, "Are you sure you don't want to word check it?" I will have published it by the time I get home. So you will be able to link to the AlterNet story. You will be able to link to the original Reuters bulletin, which is called Covering Trump the Reuters Way. Just to excerpt a little bit of it, Adler said, Reuters is a global news organization that reports independently and fairly in more than 100 countries, including places in which the media is unwelcome and frequently under attack. I'm proud of our work in places such as Turkey, Philippines, Egypt, Iraq, Yemen, Thailand, China, Zimbabwe, and Russia, nations in which we sometimes encounter some combination of censorship, legal prosecution, visa denials, and even physical threats to our journalists. So while he never actually uses the phrase that we're covering the Trump administration like an authoritarian regime, in much politer language, he's essentially comparing the coverage of the Trump regime to the regimes in other authoritarian countries. So if that post is not available, it will be after I get home, and you will be able to read not only the AlterNet story, but also the actual Reuters publication. There's a link there. I was talking to my wife and one of her postdocs yesterday, and they actually gave me an idea for what I think may end up being the primary topic of today's show. But of course, you guys, you know, define that. And I might add, this is technically an open forum, so whatever I'm talking about, you're not obliged to comment upon, but you may. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. My wife and her postdoc were not born in the United States, So in my wife's case, what she knows about how our government functions and the history of how our government was formed mostly goes back to her citizenship tests. In the case of her postdoc, it's sort of what she has picked up while she's been here. And she is from India, which has a democratic form of government, though not identical to ours. And they started asking questions like, which branch of the government is considered supreme? And I had to go into how our government is constructed so that no branch is technically considered supreme, constitutionally speaking. Constitutionally speaking, they're all co-equal. So I came up with some bullet points that I thought I would touch on tonight, and then we can go a little further. And there is a reason that the first thing I mentioned was that Reuters story about covering the Trump regime in the same way they do authoritarian regimes around the world. These are my bullet points. First of all, our founders did not design our government to be efficient. They designed it to be safe. People who say they want government to run like a business miss the point. Government is not a business. People who say they want government to run like a household, and this is often a trope brought up for budgetary reasons, they want government to run like a household, they miss the point. Government is not a household. Here's the thing. Government is a sovereign. This is entirely different and unique, totally unlike being either a business or a household. And this is an important distinction. No one branch is meant to be supreme. The three branches of government, the executive, legislative, and this is kind of a primer. I'm sure a lot of you guys listening know this, but in case anyone doesn't or doesn't think about how this works, so bear with me. No one branch of the government is meant to be supreme. The three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial, were designed to be co-equal. The tug of war that goes on among them, the inefficient tug of war that makes things hard, is actually designed to slow things down, to make them safe, but actually make them inefficient. In today's terminology, the inefficiency designed into our government is not a bug. It's a feature. As an addendum, I've said for many years that people who have run big businesses should not be politicians and certainly should not be president. And if there was ever an example of why I believe that, it's Trump. Businesses are authoritarian by nature. They are not democracies. And when you have someone in charge of a small business and they interact with their employees on a day-to-day basis, they tend to develop more understanding and empathy, and they are not quite as authoritarian. When you get someone who's at the head of a big business, where mostly they're interacting with the executives underneath them, these people are generally not Democrats, and they're generally not democratically minded, and they generally don't broach people refusing or questioning their orders. So what we are now experiencing in our government with Trump issuing executive orders and the Congress passing various pieces of legislation and the courts basically saying these things are either illegal or unconstitutional and putting restraining orders on them, we are now experiencing the wisdom of the feature that the founders put into the system, not the bug, but the feature to make things hard, to make the branches co-equal. And we are witnessing that as the Trump regime attempts to establish its supremacy rather than its co-equality over the other branches. Before I take phone calls, and I know I've got a couple, and we do have open lines, 713-526-5738, I just want to mention one other thing. I believe on the last show, I mentioned that there was a story that there was a military convoy in, I believe it was Kentucky, that rolled through without military markings but flying a Trump flag. And at the time, no, this was January 30th, that story. Again, I have a link to it. And at the time, nobody knew if it was an official military convoy, actual military, or if it was like some militia people. Well, turns out it was a SEAL unit. It was an actual active duty military unit. The military convoy spotted on Sunday flying a Trump flag. This is from February 1st, so this is a couple of days later. near Louisville, Kentucky, belonged to an East Coast-based SEAL unit, a Navy spokesperson told ABC News. Military officials have launched an inquiry to determine if any misconduct can be linked to the incident. Regulations do not permit unauthorized flags on a military vehicle. Photos and video of the convoy spread quickly on social media, with many questioning the identity of the occupants and whether the vehicles belong to a military unit or were military surplus. And the story goes on. I've got a few other quotes here. The convoy was service members assigned to East Coast-based Naval Special Warfare Unit driving vehicles while transiting between two training locations. Lieutenant Jackie Maxwell, spokesperson for Naval Special Warfare Group 2, told ABC News. Naval Special Warfare Units is the Navy official term for the elite SEAL Special Operations Teams. Why is this important? Well, this is important because the military is supposed to be apolitical. Now, that doesn't mean that military people don't have opinions, and it doesn't mean they're not allowed to have opinions. It just means that they're not supposed to take political sides. So when you have a special operations unit, a SEAL unit, flying a Trump flag or any non-authorized United States flag or unit flag or division flag or whatever, that begins to raise the question of loyalty. And the reason that that becomes important is authoritarian regimes rely on the military to take and maintain power. So we have a SEAL unit flying a Trump flag, apparently not flying any other flag or having any other markings. And that raises the question of unit loyalty. Are they loyal to the Constitution of the United States, or are they loyal to Trump? Okay, I am going to be ready to take phone calls now. Let me do a quick station ID because we're probably going to be busy. We do have open lines, 713-526-5738. We've got four people waiting, but we have open lines, and I like to get everybody on who calls at this point in the show, so you are guaranteed at least a couple of minutes, 713-526-5738. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. And KPFT.org, by the way, is how you can help support this show and this station. I always like to remind people of that. So, Gary.
Hey, Mike.
Man, you wanted to be first in line.
Well, I want to bring up an off-topic question.
Okay.
And I was hoping you would address it later after we get through the politics.
And, do we ever?
Well, not really, but I'm hoping maybe some of your other listeners may have some input on this.
Okay.
This is a really dumb question, but I've been thinking about it. I'm an environmentalist. I'm a biologist. I am a lover of nature, and I've been thinking about Pruitt and all these people that are anti-EPA. And
Pruitt being the guy that's been nominated to head the Environmental Protection Agency and has like 14 lawsuits pending against him and has said he wouldn't even recuse himself and is obviously anti-environment. Just for the audience.
I've read today somewhere that they're looking to deconstruct the EPA. And, you know, the EPA protects our air and our water. And then, of course, we've got this entire anti-global climate change attitude in the administration. And we've got people that want to, you know, end the endangered species. And it all gets back to business and money and income. And I understand humanity. I understand greed. I understand selfishness. I understand what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine.
Actually, what's mine is mine and what's yours is negotiable. And I think also spite figures into some of this stuff.
Now, this may be psychological in nature. I don't know if you can address this, but I really want your opinion. I cannot understand why any human being on Earth, even if there was like a 5% chance that we could destroy the entire planet, even if we have evidence that we are destroying the planet, that we are wiping out the elephants, the rhinos, the lions, and the tigers, that we are destroying, poisoning the water that we drink, poisoning the earth that we grow stuff in, destroying the environment and the climate, I can't understand why anyone would be motivated by money or anything else, power, politics, you name it, to destroy their own home, their only place of existence. For what reason, how could anybody be opposed to protecting the planet they live on? I don't understand this. It seems to be pervasive. pervasive nowadays. And, yeah, okay, we want to make more money, more money, more money. But why are they ignorant? Are they stupid? Are they evil? Are they satanic? That's all I want to say. You can bring that up later in the program, but I want your opinion on that because I can't figure out what motivates any human to burn their own home down.
Well, I think you answered. I think you answered your own question. I added the word spite. People that are just spiteful. It's like, that wasn't my president or my Congress that passed that stuff, and by golly, I'm going to repeal it. I actually came up with a suggestion on Twitter. I didn't get any retweets on it, but I think it's an interesting notion. You know the old expression, not in my backyard?
Yes.
Well, you realize that even rich people probably don't own the mineral rights under their properties, right?
Yep.
So why don't we drill in their backyards and give them a taste?
But there's another level here. Okay, we're on the human level. Money and power.
For some people, empathy only comes from their own pain. They cannot empathize unless they have been there. So drill in their backyards.
All right, if I disagreed with you and you made me angry, would I shoot myself in the head? Don't you get it? The whole point is we're destroying our only home in the entire universe. We're destroying. They're opposed to the EPA. They don't care if the water's dirty and they'll drink it and get poisoned. They don't care if the air's dirty and their kids will breathe it and get asthma. They don't care if the planet gets overheated or climate change and they drown
well,
in the flood.
I'm not going to say that.
I'm going to get off, but
okay.
I'm just asking, what could motivate any human, with the exception of total ignorance and total stupidity, not even greed, to destroy the planet if there was even a sliver of a chance that that could happen? How could anyone say, well, I don't believe in climate change, but, well, maybe. You know what
well,
I mean? Come on.
Okay,
it's your own planet.
I'm gonna let you go then, and I will. I'll discuss that briefly, and it may come back
What's
up later.
What's your opinion? Is it a psychological thing? It can't be pure politics.
No, it isn't pure politics. I think it comes down to ignorance, narrow-mindedness, and this obviously it's going to be a different mixture of, let's call them pathologies, for different people. But it's ignorance, denial, spite, greed, lack of empathy, in some cases maybe actually sociopathy. Sociopathy, one of the key traits is that you cannot actually see the consequences of your actions. So A, in your head, A doesn't lead to B. There is nothing leading from A. B will take care of itself whenever it pops up.
All right, now when you're robbing a liquor store and you may get killed or you may be arrested and spend life in prison or you may kill someone, I understand. But if you're a leader in one of the most powerful governments of the free world, can we explain it that way?
Sure, because you've got politicians that are elected. Anybody who runs for office, I mean, let's be candid. I'm on the radio. I'm not going to deny that I fall into somewhere in this category. Anybody who wants public exposure or public life, there's a certain amount of narcissism. There's a certain amount of ego. If you don't have something like that at a minimum, you don't want to do what I'm doing. You don't want to do what politicians are doing. And the higher you aspire to be politically, the more you have these and other qualities.
Who was it that said, those who strive most to lead are the least qualified to do so?
Don't know, but it's one I've heard many times, and it's probably not wrong. I'm going to have to let you go, Gary. I got other folks on.
I'm listening.
Okay, thanks so much for calling, as always.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We have open lines. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on 90.1 FM in Houston, KPFT. My website is thinkwingradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at thinkwingradio. And, of course, you can always support KPFT by going to kpft.org, clicking on the tip jar, whatever they're calling it these days, and supporting us to whatever degree you can, $5, $50, $500, anything you can afford is always appreciated. Jerry is up next. Jerry, how are you doing tonight?
No, I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
Okay. What do you think of my civics discussion?
Oh, I think it's basically correct. And I'd like to point out that everybody that joins up with our armed forces takes an oath to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And, let me repeat that, and domestic.
And there are also manuals that they are required to learn that talk about things like illegal orders and things of that nature.
Yeah, right. You know, there's lots of things where, you know, you can sit there and say no to the general, and the general, you know, you may wind up in court, but you're likely to get through okay if you're following the right rules. So, yeah, that's...
It's not an easy thing to do to stand up to authority, but it is actually... In a way, it's encouraged and discouraged simultaneously in any chain of command in the government. But it's not easy, but it is doable and technically required of you.
Well, I'll just make this observation to you. There's few societies that are more go-along-to-get-along and everything more conformist than the United States is.
No.
The idea that this is a country of mavericks is hilarious on the face of it, and they've actually done studies on this. And everything, and you know, basically, your parents here are twice as likely to tell you than somebody in Europe, you know, oh, you should just agree with whoever or go along with it or do whatever and everything. They've shown that over and over again.
Well, I think that it's unfair to specifically point out the United States citizens as being prone to authority. I think that's a human tendency. Go along to get along.
So too, but
you know, in Japan,
shown,
in Japan, hold on. In Japan, there is actually a saying that the nail that sticks up gets pounded down. And that kind of sums up what people confront when they buck authority anywhere. I think it speaks, and I mean, I don't know how this is going to play out in the end, but I think it speaks well of this country that there is the level of protest there is, that there's the level of resistance in different branches of government that there is among career civil servants, that even some appointees, low-level appointees, are resistant, that we had to have the equivalent of a Saturday night massacre from Nixon's era in order to get a compliant acting AG for Trump. I mean, I think all of that speaks well and hopefully bodes well for how our country will eventually get through this. I think the Republicans are going to be tarred with this like Hoover tarred them with the Depression. I think this is going to stick for generations.
Well, it may be true. I don't know. At some point or another, you would think a lot of Republicans, and some of them seem to already want to do it, you know, basically want to drop Trump like a hot rock. And certainly you get that feeling from McCain and Lindsey Graham.
But you know what? Feelings are one thing and actions are another.
If
you had these Republicans joining up with Democrats, we could impeach Trump tomorrow.
The thing about it is that, you know, they're trying to take advantage of a situation.
Their
and you
power.
Can't really totally fault them for it. As much as I dislike Trump, as much as I think that he's a bad move for even Republicans, you know, on a certain level, you can understand it.
As a party, I think the Republicans are exhibiting the worst kind of cowardice as a party.
Oh, I don't know. I think that, once again, you know, you talk about people being, you know, things about human traits and all that. It's natural to want to take advantage of the situation and to go with it, to as far with it as you can. Now, of course, this is one of the things that consistently hurts Republicans and everything. Republicans could have taken over the world a long time ago if they had been more moderate, if they hadn't been like, you know.
But then they wouldn't be Republicans. They would be centrist Democrats.
You know, we want everything across the table. We want all the marbles. If they'd sat there and said, we'll leave you a few marbles, you know, and everything, and we'll guarantee you can have those marbles forever and all that, they would have taken over the world. This is a point I've tried to get across to people like Barry before over and over again.
But you see, it's the scorpion and the frog or the turtle,
yeah.
I've been corrected. I mean, it's their nature. It's just in their nature. And
it's in our nature, unfortunately. But
well, I think Democrats, I mean, just looking at how Democrats are handling this situation, Democrats don't have the spines that Republicans have. Democrats are much more likely to eat their own. Democrats are much more likely to be splintered. Democrats are much more likely to compromise. And, of course, in the face of compromise, Republicans do not yield.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, there's
but
an old
also,
there was an old expression. Hold on, I just want to add one more thing, and I've tracked this quote to Cyrus Vance when he was talking about negotiating with the Soviet Union. He said that the Soviet stance was always what's ours is ours, what's yours is negotiable, and the Republicans have pretty much adopted that stance.
Yeah, Well, yeah, I think so. But the thing about it is I think that now I forgot my lost my train of thought.
Sorry,
because I wasn't going to get it in there. It'll come back to me in a second. But no, what it is you know, basically Democrats want things a certain way and all that. And oh, yeah, you should have let me go ahead.
But anyway, you can call back
just
if you think
to go back to another point. Maybe I'll be able to remember later.
Okay,
we'll come up. Just to go back to what's his name, Gary's point. You know, Gary, I hate to say this, and I hate to say this about my own co-religionist, but and everything. But there are Christian groups that actually think that the closer we come to ecological disaster like that, you know, basically they think they can force the apocalypse to come on more quickly.
James Watt under Reagan was like that.
A couple of groups that actually think that.
Yeah, there are.
And everything, and that seems crazy to me, even though I'm a Christian and everything, but, and I think it probably seems crazy to most Christians, but still, there are groups like that. And there may be groups like that in other religions, too, but I know that there's some groups like that in Christian, there's some Christian groups like that.
In the Reagan administration, there was a Secretary of the Interior by the name of James Watt. And
yeah,
he was very against environmental regulations. And once when he was asked about his stance on that, he said, well, there's no point in worrying about saving resources and clean air for future generations because when Jesus comes back, it's, you know, it's all going to be worthless anyhow. We might as well use it while it's here. There aren't future generations to save it for. That was basically his stance. He was an evangelical Christian believing in the end times.
Yeah.
So there was no point in conserving anything.
The end times don't, you know, basically.
Well, they never have.
You know, I think my point is, though, is that basically, you know, it says really clearly in the Bible that that's not going to be doable and everything. I mean, the implication is that, you know, basically this will occur under God's, you know, on the time frame that God's already decided on. And,
could be in a million years. Could be in
500
years.
Yeah, could be in a million years. And so you want to ask why, in the meantime, suffer and make your fellow human beings suffer. That's a particularly anti-Christian attitude, by the way, to feel that way.
Well, you know, when Republicans talk about Robin Hood Democrats, liberal Robin Hood Democrats, this was something a comedian brought up, and I'm going to have to look this quote up again. His point basically is, when did the Sheriff of Nottingham and Prince John become the good guys in the story?
Well, that's true.
And that seems to be where the Republicans have gone, that the Sheriff of Nottingham and Prince John, they're the good guys. Robin Hood, in spite of the original mythology, he's just a criminal that steals from the doers and gives to the takers.
Yeah.
That's now the Republican version of Robin Hood.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. And I just wanted to mention, too, that there's an interview, actually. It's online. And you can get access to it for free. It's on the Democracy, a Journal of Ideas website. And it's an interview that Tycho Tomaski had with Theda Skocpol. And I think you ought to read that. I think that I'd urge everybody out there to read that. I think she says some really smart things there, and I think she says some stuff that a lot of people aren't going to like. But, you know, basically, you know, gerrymandering will only, you know, if we could eliminate gerrymandering tomorrow, she makes a point, if we could eliminate gerrymandering tomorrow, we'd still have half the problems that we have with the electoral system and all that, and the problems, you know, eliminating all these things won't really solve, in of and by themselves, won't really solve
humans always Humans always find workarounds. I'm going to let you go, Jerry. I got a couple of other callers. I appreciate, as always, your contribution.
All right,
take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on controls. Appreciated as always. You can help keep this station on the air by going to kpft.org and contributing whatever you can, hopefully in the name of this show. You can follow me on Twitter at Think Wing Radio, and you can go to my website, thinkwingradio.com, where I have archived shows and articles and other interesting stuff. Okay, next up is Scott. And by the way, just before we go, Scott, we have open line 713-526-5738. Scott, how are you?
Thank you. You know why I'm not afraid of Donald Trump?
Tell me.
It makes him more powerful to be afraid of him. Stiff upper lip.
It's a point.
Oh, I went to a Democratic club meeting tonight, and we all introduced ourselves, and I said, I voted for Donald Trump because he has been married only once. Alternative fact.
Yes, alternative fact.
I got some chuckles. Actually, people generally didn't talk about him all that much. We had candidates for Democratic Party chair, and there was talk about organizing the party, county party, better. And
who's running?
Four people that came. Lily Schechter, Chris Spellman, Eartha Johnson, and I can't think of the other guy's name.
How did they impress you? Much, not much?
Well, reasonably well, and I had been to a meeting of the GLBT caucus last Wednesday, and we endorsed Lily Schechter, and people in the screen committee were quite impressed with her for mainly about doing the job.
Schechter is a familiar political name.
Right. Schechter, her mother, was county chair back in the late 90s. And,
okay.
A little bit into the 2000s.
So a little dynastic, but that doesn't necessarily count against her.
Yeah, she was Gerald Bernberg's predecessor.
Yeah, I remember Jerry.
Uh-huh.
I've spoken to him recently, actually. We were discussing some constitutional election law.
Yeah. Yeah, I've known Gerald quite some time.
Okay, anything else?
I do believe in courage. I think it took a lot of courage to cross that bridge at Remagen. You know, you remember it?
Yeah.
Over
the Ruhr?
The Rhine. I thought it was
over the Rhine. River. Could be.
But anyway, the Nazis had set explosive charges, but the Allies managed to disarm this charges just in time and went across the bridge and entered into Germany east of the Rhine.
And if that bridge had blown, it would have made crossing much more dangerous and much more costly. But to get to your point, courage, I mean, the reason that we admire courage is that in the pinch, most of us don't have it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to exclude myself. I mean, there are times I have done well in periods of crisis, but there are times when I maybe should have stood up that I didn't. And then there are times that I did stand up, and it turned out to be a bad idea because no one backed me and I got punished for it.
Yeah.
So it goes both ways.
Yeah. Well, I had an English professor who described the day Roosevelt died, and he said he pulled a gun on a comrade for saying, "We can't win without Roosevelt." I guess the professor was military police.
Well, you know, there's a quote that has been attributed to Charles de Gaulle that the graveyards are full of indispensable men.
Okay.
And if you think about it, that's profound, because what it means is that nobody is indispensable. Everybody passes from the scene, and there's always someone that has to take over, better or not as well, but there's always somebody.
Oh, but I think de Gaulle often considered himself indispensable, didn't he?
I think he did, and I think that he was authoritarian in some ways, and I think France was better for him passing from the scene.
Yeah. Yeah, he became president later, and they had a change of constitution. They thought the parliamentary government was too undisciplined. He was expected to bring more discipline to the French government, and undoubtedly did.
Which kind of makes my point, that he had authoritarian tendencies.
Oh, yes.
He was a hero because of the circumstances under which he returned to France and the circumstances under which he was exiled from France, but he was not entirely... You know, he was a Democrat in theory.
Okay.
In principle. Yeah. In practice, a little less.
Yeah. And Churchill was an aristocrat. He had that background, although he had an American mother, but...
Well, but he also put his money where his mouth was. He was in combat. Yeah. He had been in the military. He understood what war meant.
Yes.
I mean, you can say many things about Churchill and the type of person that finds pleasure or fun or excitement in those things, but he was not ignorant of them.
He had to adopt a more democracy.
Yes.
In fact, he lost an election when he was at Potsdam and had to step down.
Was it Churchill who said that democracy is the worst system in the world, except for all the others?
I've heard that.
I think it was Churchill.
Yeah, I could say that.
Okay, I'm going to ask you if there's anything else you want to wrap up with, and then we'll go on to the next
call. I think I'm finished. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling, Scott. Take care. Okay, next up is MOD. You're on the air, MOD. How you doing tonight?
Hey, Mike. What's going on? That's the 100-year anniversary of Bolshevism, 1917, official.
I'm sorry. Saying is it the one?
It's the century anniversary of Bolshevism.
Yes, I think in like October,
1917.
October, September, something like that.
Yeah, 19. And I, you know, going into the end of the 19th century, going and beginning of the 1900s, there's like 60 million Christians that were, you know, just genocide by the Bolsheviks. Why don't they ever talk about that?
Well, why? I mean, they do. When I was
not
in
really.
School, no, when I was in school, there was a lot of talk about the Bolsheviks and how they executed the royal family and,
but
Stalin, the purges.
No, you don't hear that. Though.
I'm sorry, say again?
You don't hear about the 60 million Christians that were murdered by the Bolsheviks.
Well, not specifically, but since most of the Russians and Soviets were Christian, I'm sure that most of the people killed in various purges were Christian by default.
Well, I'm just saying it's just...
They weren't targeted because they were Christians, unless they were maybe clergy and leaders.
You know, the Churchill was a page for Parliament, and...
I'm sorry, say that again. Churchill was what?
A page. You know, like when you're young and you work in, like, in Congress, you know, you're the page.
Oh, okay. Like an intern, the equivalent.
Yeah. And he reported daily to Prince Edward. You know, sort of like a snitch. And that's how he worked his way up in the ranks.
Maybe.
There's historians that have documented Churchill's means of getting into power, but he's just a stooge. But these guys, they're basically come to America, they're Trotskyites. Leon Strauss, Ian, Bill Kristol's dad.
Well,
Ivan Kristol was a Trotskyite.
I'm going to ask you to get to the point here, otherwise we're going to go through a long history lesson.
I think if you let everyone else talk, Mike, I can at least give you a little history that what we're saying here is that these folks that are all the Republicans, from Richard Pearl to Beast or to Bill Kristol's dad, Ivan Kristol, or even David Axelrod, the great-grandnephew of Trotsky, these political ideologies come from the Bolsheviks, and they're on both sides of the party. But I was just thinking of that when you were talking. But this is for Gary. He was mentioning about the UN or about the climate change or overpopulation. This lady's name is Christina Figueres. She is the United Nations Framework Convention Climate Change Executive Secretary, has announced in investment.com last Friday that the goal is not for the environmental activists is not to save the world ecological calamity, but to destroy capitalism. This is from the UN itself. Look it up.
You know, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I would not consider that the official position of the UN.
No, of course not. But when you're saying that this whole scheme of climate change is actually another falsehood.
Well, climate change is real. You know, my feeling is you can debate how much human activity is responsible for it. I think the science says quite a bit. But there's also orbital variations, rotational variations, axial variations, solar input, what they call insolation. All of those things determine weather, in addition to human activity. But denial of climate change is stupid. The climate is changing. So the question is, what are we going to do to minimize our input in that change and that warming? And what are we going to do, even if it's not due to us, in terms of sea level is demonstrably rising? Do you know one of the more interesting proofs of sea level rise is old paintings that were done in Venice, where they have buildings that are still standing that show the water level at a certain point, and when you go there today, the water level is like 6 feet higher. So, I mean, we have documentation. We know that it's happening. And to quibble over who's responsible is stupid, because the question is, what are we going to do to protect ourselves? It's
okay,
that simple.
So I hear you, Mike. So she goes on to continue that really the major concern is not the ecological, but it's actually economic cover model, which is, you know, since the Industrial Revolution of the 150 years means of capitalism. And the biggest concern that the UN has is with overpopulation. So this article is investment.com. Look it up. And no, I'm not going to say there's no such thing as climate change. It's just the folks that are presented as that have another agenda, and that's something else. That's to the point.
Well, you know, the far left is no better than the far right in their own way.
Well, you know, there's the size of the state of Texas, a polymer floating in the middle of the Pacific Rim. You know,
I think they call it the gyre.
That's in the crab crustacean. There's the sea urchins. The sardines are non-existent from British Columbia down to Tijuana. The water is so warm, and so they're saying that's just you know. But anyway, we're mucked up. The Gulf.
Yeah,
let's. Know,
I'm going to ask you to wrap it up, because now I've got four other callers behind.
All right, brother. Well, I'm just saying, yeah, we screw the planet up. I'm not.
We
anyone
do.
Anyone that looks the other way is an idiot. But I'll give you a little more on this Bolshevism next call. Appreciate
okay,
you,
fair enough. Thank you so much. Take care. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Koenig. Bob Gartner's on control. Support KPFT by going to kpft.org and contributing whatever you can. ThinkWingRadio.com is my blog. At ThinkWingRadio is where I am on Twitter. And Sally, you are on the air, and thanks for being patient. How you doing? We're going to keep it a little shorter now because we're getting in the last 18 minutes.
Patience is my thing, and humility also. So I'm a bit older than maybe some of your listening audience, but one of the things my mother taught me, and she said, if you're speaking truth to power, as we all should do once in a while, if you're speaking truth to power and your knees aren't knocking and your hands aren't shaking, then you're not doing it right.
That's a good saying.
Yes, I think it's time for those.
Was that from your grandma, you said? Was that
ma'am?
Was that from your grandma, you said?
My mother.
Your mother.
My mother, yeah.
I may make a note of that.
She had her issues up and down and around the dial and then some, you know. But she was astute, and she was well-educated, and she did know. And I think that is one of those things. I went to the Women's March, and my son was like, be careful, Mom, be careful. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I will, of course. But at the same time, you know, you have to have some trust in the social institutions, and it was all there.
Yeah.
I mean, the HPD was incredible. They expected 4,000 or 5,000 people. They got 22,000 people.
Wow.
There was not anything bad. Nothing bad happened there. And that was a very powerful thing for me. But in my personal life, like speaking up to authority, speaking up to maybe a boss that's mistreating me or something like that. And yes, my knees were knocking, my hands were shaking, and that's how I knew I was doing it right.
That's a good story. I like that.
It's a bit scary.
Yes.
Yes, it's a bit scary.
You're up against authority in a way that's really tangible.
Fear is how they prey on us, right? You fear the collapse of the economic system, or you fear the collapse of your own personal life. You fear this and you fear that, right? That's okay. I mean, cautiously being careful or cautiously being conservative, like in your own personal life, that's a good thing. But when it comes to the greater good, you can't just stand. You can't just sit there.
You know, I'll tell you.
Sit there.
I'll tell you because it's sort of pertinent to what you're saying. I was watching a movie last night.
Okay.
I think it was called something like The Edge of Darkness. It was a 1943 movie with Errol Flynn. About a Norwegian village that's been occupied by the Nazis during the Second World War. And, you know, there was a great line in there, which actually then had a follow-up, where the Nazi commander is saying, It doesn't matter that they outnumber us 500 to 180 or 5,000 to 180 or 50,000 to 180. The fact is we have the guns and they're afraid to die.
Yeah.
And then later in the movie. And then, well, I mean, that's
well,
that is an extreme. Hold on.
You
now,
know,
that is an
extreme. Sometimes it's not really death.
Well, now, hold on. That is an extreme case.
Yes.
But then later in the movie, the point that they then make, the Norwegians make, is now we have guns. And they're no longer afraid to die. And, of course, you know, happy ending as far as all those people dying is a happy ending.
Of course.
But I mean, it does come down to what you're saying. It comes down at some point to a government or an institution that's willing to use force and people that are willing to protest in the face of potentially having force used against them. It's very intimidating.
It is intimidating.
And I think it speaks directly to the story you're telling.
Yes, and honestly, I mean, right now I'm working for a great company, and I'm 60 years old. I work for great companies, and I work for shitty companies, and I've worked for actually evil companies. But I have learned that, like, hey, I'm on my exit. I've given my notice. They want to know why I'm going. Mm. Well, I'm telling you, you know, I have had bosses say, like, aren't you scared to be talking to me that way? And I'm like, yes, look at my hands. They're shaking.
If my knees aren't knocking, I'm not doing it right.
Yeah. And,
okay, Sally, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
I think my main message is don't back down. Even if you're scared, back down.
It's
hard. Your fear is often a very powerful thing, motivating thing.
I don't hold fear against people, but
no. Sometimes
you have to try to fight it. I'm going to have to let you go. I've got a couple of other callers, and I'm running out of time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sally. Interesting points. Take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We do have open lines, but at this point, anyone who calls, I cannot guarantee you'll get on. 713-526-5738. Next up is Wayne. How you doing, Wayne?
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Okay, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you. Good show you're having tonight.
Thank you.
I'm glad it's open for us. First thing I'd like to say is I have no respect for the illegitimate president. What is his name, Donald Trump, or whatever y'all want to call it. But the second thing I want to know is, how long will the people of America back Trump when Trump starts World War III and he calls for the reinstatement of the draft? Because I see that coming. What do you think, Mike?
Well, the first thing I think, and I've said this for years, is I think we should have universal service. I think having a professional army is a great thing in many ways, but I think having an army that is more connected to the general population is important for keeping it under civilian control. So that's one thing. Hold on.
Now, one thing you just said, and I've been listening to your show all night, that you said that there was some troops, in Kentucky.
Yes.
And they were flying a flag that said Trump.
Yes.
Now, what should we do with those people that was in that armored vehicle?
Well,
that was flying that Trump, that they're flying that flag that said Trump, because they have broke all laws, not as to what you see it.
They have broken military rules, and I think that they have shown themselves to be unreliable. In terms of defending the Constitution, they might defend civilian authority as Trump, but they are no longer reliable, in my opinion, to defend the Constitution, which means that they could be used as elite shock troops to keep or otherwise affect Trump in power.
So now what if Trump gets impeached? What about them then?
What about those troops?
Yeah.
I do not know. That story is still evolving. I read.
I'm asking the question: What should we do with those people then that went against the Constitution?
I think they should.
Trump flag?
I think they should all be cashiered.
Okay. Now the other thing is about climate change.
Yeah.
When we see, like you said, when we see water rising and dirty air and people that went down to people allow children in Michigan, Flint, Michigan, to be poisoned. And no one seems to care. What should we think about those people, which are the evangelical Christians and those people that call themselves Christians, and they voted for a man that has no respect for the United States.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I've started saying over the last several weeks, which is, you know, I've puzzled for a long time, and I'm going to have to let you go after this because we're running out of time. But I've puzzled for a long time. You know, I've said that Republicans tend to vote disproportionately to self-proclaimed Republicans in the population, and that I believe the reason for that is because Republicans tend to be angry or irritated by something, and anger and irritation tend to be very motivating things.
Hold on. Let me stop it. I'll let you finish, but just to get this, because I know you said that, I think the Republicans are cowardly voters, but go ahead on with what you got
okay.
to say.
We're talking about just getting people out to vote now. Just getting people out to vote, because the best you ever do is 65%, and that's a great turnout. Usually it's like 35, even 15 in some places, sometimes less than that. So my question that I've been asking myself for a long time is, so how do you motivate Democrats? If Republicans are motivated by anger and irritation, how do you motivate Democrats? And I have come up, the only answer I have is you have to motivate them through fear. Not lying fear, not made-up facts fear, but instill in them the real fear of what the opposition will do if you don't vote. And I think that, you know, it's unfortunate to have to frame it that way, but I think that's what it's going to take to get many Democrats, many passive non-voting Democrats out. They have to have fear instilled in them, legitimate fear for legitimate reasons, and understand what their stake is if they don't vote. And you know, I think that's what the Democratic Party, unfortunately, needs to build on.
Okay, Mike, let me say this, and I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
I think that we can change the voting. We can change the way people vote by just bringing back the draft. And we will actually see how many patriotic Republicans there are. I'm going to leave it at that. If you want to comment on it tonight, you go ahead.
I will.
But
okay.
I actually think that you don't have to vote. I mean, you don't have to inspire Democrats to get out. Just bring back the draft, and you will see how many patriotic Republicans there are.
Could be.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, Wayne. Appreciate it. Take care. Before I get to Hayden, I just want to say I have long believed that we should have universal national service. That doesn't necessarily mean a draft, but I think that the entire country would benefit from expanding young people's horizons by having them serve in a capacity of national service, whether it's in hospitals or whether it's in schools or whether it's helping in construction. And I think, and some of them I'm sure would volunteer to go into the military, but I think everybody should have a stake and get the education of getting out of their comfort zone. You know, there are people that brag about never having been out of Texas. I don't think that's anything to brag about. I think it's really unfortunate that people think that being parochial and narrow is a good thing. I know that Jerry is back on the line, but I think that because he's already been on the air, we should probably go to Hayden. Hayden, okay.
Hi. Well, first off, that's one of the things I was going to touch upon. I'm just going to go run through a couple of things real quick.
Thank you.
The universal part, what you're talking about, I've always been a proponent of why is it only men that have to go to elective service? I think everybody in this country, man or woman, to get out of high school at that age, they should have to register for the draft for selective service.
Universal national service, universal, not automatically
whatever
military.
Whatever you want to call it, but why I think it's terrible that it's only men. I think it's sexist, and they should change that.
Okay.
Because I wasn't drafted, but I entered the service in 1972. But, and, you know, it's been paying dividends ever since. The second thing I wanted to talk about was where the heck did Giuliani come out of the woodwork? That slug has come back, and now he's a mouthpiece for Trump. And that guy is he started off as a Democrat, and now he's a Republican. And he's such a slug, and he did nothing for those poor people that got damaged through the 9/11 debacle after all their thing crashed down. He did nothing to help the firemen and the policemen that were sick. He did nothing. He was just a mouthpiece and did nothing for any of those people.
He did some great PR.
Yeah, but he did nothing to help them. You know, there was nothing there. He was just, he's just a slug. He just does nothing. And he just rambles on. He doesn't do anything.
He's turned into kind of a...
What I wanted to talk about was...
Okay, go ahead.
Well, that one guy, the one guy that was talking about Remagen and all that over the Rhine River, and the bridge eventually fell down, and a lot of people died because they were on the bridge when it finally just collapsed. But
by that time, they had other bridges.
You know, courage and fear. You know, that we have nothing to fear but fear itself. The famous line by Roosevelt, and that's just exactly the case. And you're right. The fear, the Democrats. You're right. It has to be succinct, exact fear placed. This is cause and effect. If you let these scumbags get in office, this is what they're going to do. And what really ticks me off, I'm an older person, but these younger people have no idea what unions have done for this country. They have no idea what collective bargaining. They have no idea what we went through to fight for the Democratic Party back in the 60s and the 70s when we were winning and getting all of these wonderful programs and stuff. There's a little pork, you know, it's always in the Congress, but the Republicans, they don't want to do anything for the average person.
Republicans have been opposed to Social Security and unemployment benefits since they were first created. They've been trying to kill that program for 80 years.
Social Security went through all kind of changes, and they've been talking about getting rid of it since it started back in the 30s. That Medicare, when in the 60s, they were trying to get rid of it. You walk up upon a Republican that's a filthy rich Republican who's making Social Security and Medicare and tell him he's going to lose it, well, he'll be the one screaming the loudest.
I'm not going to say that Republicans are evil, but I would have to say the party platform is evil.
Oh, it's very evil. What they want to do, they just work on one subject. I mean, they pick one subject over here because they know everybody over here is against abortion. They know everybody over here wants their guns. They know everybody over here. People don't even understand what health care, the national health care, Obamacare, or whatever you want to call it, has actually done for people in this country.
Hayden, because we're running out of time, I'm down to 56 and a half.
You know, it's crazy that people, and that one lady, you know, about the fear and talking. You have to stand up, and you have to say, I am brutally honest about stuff anymore, and I'm proud of it because I am tired of being scared.
It's necessary.
I'm gonna tell you straight up what it's all about.
It's necessary, but it's hard. I appreciate your calling, Hayden. I hope we'll talk another day earlier in the show when we have more time.
I understand. Thank you for your time.
Take care. All right, we're going to give Jerry 30 seconds to tell us what he remembered that he forgot.
No, I didn't. This is the answer, M-O-D. Churchill was a stooge? No. Nobody thinks that except for you and everything. Now, you may be a stooge, M.O.D. I don't know. I think you are, personally.
Keep
but
it short. 10
stooge,
seconds.
But I don't know how, what, you know, I don't know the details on that because you're not very forthcoming on it.
Okay.
Also.
I don't have time for an also. I've got 45 seconds to go, and I have to wrap up.
Oh, yeah. Let me let you go.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry. Take care. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. Bob Gartner's been on control. Support this station by going to kpft.org and contributing something in the tip jar. And thinkwingradio.com is my blog. At thinkwingradio is my Twitter. And the quote, I think, that is good for tonight from Edmund Burke, who was alive from 1729 to 1797, quote, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." I'll talk to you next week. I've enjoyed the show. Thank you so much, callers. Take care.
On Saturday, February 18th, the HBCU Truth and Reconciliation Oral History Project will offer the Houston community of color a day of healing through storytelling. Students from colleges and universities that sponsor the project will conduct interviews with and record the experiences of those who have suffered racial discrimination. Interviews take place from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Texas Southern University Law Center, 3100 Claiborne Street, Houston, Texas 77004. Interviewees must schedule an interview time and arrive 1 hour in advance. For more information, contact Project Director Reverend Steve Miller at 713-557-6520 or visit HBCUOralHistoryVideoProject.org. KPFT Houston.
We remember 2016 as a monumental year. We look toward 2017 with big questions and many unknowns. You rely on KPFT for open conversations, engaged culture, and insightful analysis. These values matter now more than ever. With KPFT's Winter Fund Drive concluded, we wish to thank you for your contribution. Your financial support sustains KPFT's financial health and independence. If you didn't get a chance to help during the campaign, you can make a tax-deductible contribution now at kpft.org.